Take two. Welcome. This is our sixth year. This is the second lecture. I guess we're in the 1300s and on. We're going maybe a little back, a little sideways. Tonight is November 19th, 2016. I can't find I keep recording them, but I can't find where the rest of them are. So I don't know if it's just it is being recorded or not, but I'm gonna, see if we can get them off from the recorder. Last week we just did. I did like a little bit of a background. One of the things that I hope to I'd like to accomplish, at least try when we learn history, is. Well, I guess three things. First of all, we want to tie in what's going on in the world generally, historically, what's going on in the world, and what's going on between the Jews and the non-Jews. And really, what we really see is world history is really Jewish history, or Jewish history is world history. Jews find themselves where all the action is. Somehow, we're there, And to bring that out. And the third is to bring out the Masorah, the tradition of Jewish learning. From Har Sinai, we never had a break in the learning process. It was always a Talmud to a Rebbe to the next generation, and throughout the generations, there were always leaders, Gedolim, Rabbanim, that were guiding the Jewish people. So those are the three things that we try to bring out. Last week, I tried to bring out they use history as one of the proofs to the Torah. When they focus in on the history, you take a look and you say there has to be a control here, because first of all, the Torah makes a prediction about what happens in the historical sense, and it happened. And not only that, but the proofs that they bring are each one is really contradicting the other. Okay, the this week I was hoping. Did I just skip two? No. Okay, I was hoping this week to talk about England, the history of the Jews in England. Now the Jews in England are going to be in England for a period of about almost 300 years, between 200 and 300 years, and they're going to be in that period . And in that period, they're going to accomplish a lot. And after that period, they're going to be thrown out. In 1292, they're going to be expelled from England in its entirety. And they're not going to be coming back to England for another 350 years. I mean, it's going to be Judenreid. There's going to be no Jews whatsoever, at least no community. Maybe Jews would be coming in, in and out. But there's not going to be any Jews till about the 1650s. When Oliver Cromwell, takes over, but that's way, way, way in the distance. At least for us, we're not there yet. So today, I would like to just discuss England. Now, again, we're going a little bit back, and then I don't know if we'll get to 1292 today, but we'll start off with what happened with England. Well. England, we know from the very beginning, there were the Celts were some sort of a tribe that was in that that came in from Europe into England, and I guess Celts, we know the Celts from the Boston Celtics. That's really where it came from. So I guess people from Boston, they were originally from England or from these Celt tribes, and they were the people that conquered way, way early on. And we're talking from 8th century B.C. I mean, that's a real, really long time ago. Stonehenge, I guess, really comes from that time. Really, really ancient time. And England really doesn't come into play till about the Romans. The Romans come in, and they're building their empire. And slowly but surely, they make their way up, and they make their way into Great Britain. I think it was Julius Caesar himself, if I'm not mistaken, was the first conqueror first emperor that actually made it into England. It would make sense because 43 would be about when, just think that through, Julius Caesar was, I'm not sure. Let me take that back. I'm not sure. But Caesar, the Romans actually were conquering into England. They conquered all of Europe, and slowly but surely they were moving their way up. They were in from 43 to 410. 410 of the Common Era. Well, in the 400s, the Roman Empire did not do very well, and they were invaded by various German tribes from the north, and there was one raid by the. There was one raid. I think the Vandals came in about 410, 415, and they were able to hold them back off. But the official fall of Rome was 476. But already, they were. You know, the empire, the Roman Empire was falling apart. The one who made the biggest headway of the Roman Empire was a person by the name of Trajan. And he was the one that pushed the empire during his reign. Trajan was the largest the Roman Empire became. Just in perspective, the one after Trajan was Hadrian, and Hadrian was the Bar Kokhba rebellion, which was 135-136 of the Common Era. So the Romans came in they came in 43 of the Common Era. The destruction of the second base of Mikdash was 70. By Trajan, you know, things the empire kept getting bigger and bigger, and then after Trajan, it was like slowly the empire was holding its own in certain areas, but in the 400s, it was just about over, and 476 was the fall of the Roman Empire. When they left. Okay, there are some Latin words like Chester and Lancaster comes from castra, military group, you know. So there are Latin words that come in from there. They also established, the Romans established a city called Londinium, which today is London. That came from the Romans. That was a Roman city. Again, the Romans built their cities on water because that's how they transported supplies, men. Okay. When the Romans realized that they weren't going to be able to conquer the entire entire British island, the entire area, and they were not able to get to the northern of England, so in its narrowest point, they built what's called Hadrian's Wall. Hadrian's Wall. How long that wall is? It's a few hundred miles, maybe over 1,000 miles of wall. To keep out the northern tribes, and this was the wall that the Roman Empire built. Romans being in south of England, and the other tribes that they did not conquer were in the north. If right near the wall is a city that's very famous, or at least in the Jewish population, that's called Gateshead. So if you ever, anybody ever been to Gateshead? Gateshead is a beautiful. It's like a yeshivish community. It has a big yeshiva there. That's where Gateshead hid. Here's Gateshead. Here's Manchester. Another Jewish community in London would be somewhere down here. So the other two or three of the big Jewish communities. Somebody once said that again in terms of Jewish history, what is and what was. When the Romans were the empire, that's it. It looked like they were going to be there forever, you know, Hadrian's. But today, you go there, what's left of the Roman Empire is bits and pieces of Hadrian's Wall, and you could, I don't know if you could walk from there, but very, very close by that wall is a yeshiva, you know. And, you know, when you have the Romans, you know, Asa and Yaakov, what's left of Roman is nothing, and here you have the yeshiva Gateshead, where hundreds of people sitting and learning today. Just you see the contrast. That's the contrast between Romans and what was and what is. So we're just going through the England, the old, the history of England. So all you missed so far is that the Romans came in about 43 of the Common Era, and by 410 they were out. And one thing they left was a wall, but they left other things too. One other thing, which very important thing that they left, was Christianity. Wherever the Romans came, they came with them was Christianity. Romans under Constantine, one of the Roman emperors, he went from paganism and he went, brought Christianity, became the official religion. And since then, Rome and Christianity were really one and the same. There was no separation of church and state, or there was, not like we have here in America. But when the Roman Empire left, Christianity did not leave. So the whatever was there in terms of whatever, I don't know if they called them priests back then, but they had their missionaries or whatever, and that was still left in England. So this is the that was left in the Romans. In about the 400s, after the Romans left, what got the Romans out? So this is really was the entire shift during the 4th and 5th century of Europe, was an entire shift of the German tribes. And that also the Vandals and all those, it was those that went south and sacked Rome, and the Visigoths and the Vandals, they went south, and there were other German tribes that were displaced. Everything moved west. So you had one tribe being sent out, and they went west, and some went south. Now, there were two German tribes, the Angles and the Saxons, and those were two of the tribes that they invaded Great Britain in, the 400s. That's what led, in 410, they were invaded by the Angles and the Saxons, hence the name of the country is England, from the Angles. Angles, England, that's where the word England comes from. So in the 4th, 5th century, the Angles and the Saxons, they made their way into England, what today is England, and Britain, it was called it then, so this is a famous thing, this is where this all comes from. Eventually, the Angles and the Saxons, they won everything, but at some point, there was a king by the name of Arthur, who was one of the Celtic chieftains. And there was this big battle in 516, and he won. He won at least for a short time. Arthur was able to hold back the German tribes. And this was King Arthur, and this gave rise and legend to King Arthur and the Round Table and the knights and everything. So he ended up losing everything, but for a time, King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table and whatever, that all came from this time. Merlin, I don't know, knights, okay. So that's where that came from. Now, again, no Jews yet. This is all like the just history of Germany. Germans in England, now you have the Germans from 500 to 800. So for the next 300 years, the Angles, the Saxons, the Germans, they have conquered England, and it's all them. I guess you had the Celts. The Celts that were there from before, they laid the foundation of government, divide the land into hundreds, and boroughs were fortresses. So you had hundreds and boroughs, and I guess that's where we get the word borough from. Borough Park, Queens Borough, or whatever, five boroughs in New York. Okay, that's where these names come from. Okay, so that's it for the next 300 years. Now we have Germans in England. England is now run by the German tribes. Comes in the 800s, now come the Vikings. Now come the, just before that, so just a few names, also which help us, the Reeves. Reeves were a semi-autonomous area administered by officials called Reeves. Now you had shires. Shires were areas. If you had hundreds and boroughs, cities and fortresses together, they were called shires. Later, they were called counties. So that's where we get our county from. But they were called shires and reeves. So officials of shires were called shire reeves. Eventually, it was called sheriffs. And here's Robin Hood, sheriff. So the sheriff of Nottingham was the official, the official of the Shire of Nottingham was the Reeve, who was the head guy who was in charge of that area, was, okay, that's, he was called, today we call it a sheriff, it was eventually shortened to sheriff, and, okay, that's, so now we covered King Arthur, we covered Robin Hood, let's see what else did we get to. All right, mid-800s, Vikings attack. So here they come from Norway, Sweden, and not sure why they attacked. They attacked, it could be they were overpopulation, it could be they were having famines, and it could be they were just, but they were attacking everything. The Vikings went all over the place. They went, and they were all, they made it as far as Poland. They went this way, you know, they went east here. They ended up in Poland a little bit. But mainly they were, for the most part, at least in mainland Europe, they were raiders. They would come, they would come into a land, they would raid, they'd take their stuff, and they'd leave. At least we'll see in some place that they actually settled in northern France. But here they came, when they came in the 800s, so they took different parts of England. So they took it away from the German tribes, and they settled in the, let's see, the western part of Ireland, the northeastern part of Scotland, and the western part of England. Okay, so that's, now you have, from the 800s on, now you have the Vikings. Okay, they're the new game. That's it. The new boss. You know, the new head honcho. Okay, and that starts in the mid 800s. They also made their way into Spain and into England and into France, and they were coming in all over. As a matter of fact, because of these Viking raids, this is in Europe, in order to protect from them, this is when they started the feudal system. The feudal system where is that, first of all, you made castles so that the Vikings weren't good at sieges and breaking through castles. So that's how you were able to stop against the raids of the Vikings. Vikings were mainly seafaring. They'd come on land, they'd make their raids, and they'd leave. And they also, the feudal system was, is that, look, you protect us. You know, the knights were the army, and they would get from the nobles, and the people who would work there would be protected. The noble would have to protect the people, the peasants. And the peasants would be paying the nobles, and they'd give them their food, and the nobles would provide protection, which ended up, the feudal system came directly because of the Vikings. Okay, so here they did settle a lot in England, and let's see if we have, okay, eventually there was King Alfred, Germans reconquered England, became the descendant of King of England. Okay, so after about the 800s, so you had the Vikings there, and in the 800s, the Vikings were reconquered by the German people that were there. So now Vikings are out, Germans are in. Okay, so now we're back at the Germans. Now King Alfred became the king of England, and what's going to happen is that King Alfred, all the kings or dukes or nobles, they all married into each other. You know, they and therefore, you know, you could have, you know, from one side of the family, you own this area of land, and then from the wife's part, you own from her family, you own a different area. So we're going to see that's what's going to happen with England and part of France. Okay, in 911, the Viking King Rollo is granted land by Charles the Simple in France. Again, the Vikings came, they took an area called Norman, they took an area over here. Charles the Simple, I think the son, 9/11 would have been, yeah, the son of Charlemagne. He was the next Charles, and you know, the Normans, they came on land, and he made a pact with them, a treaty, a deal. He says, listen, we will give you all this land. You bring all of your Viking friends, and you settle this area. And this area was actually called Normandy, Normans. Somehow the Vikings were called Normans. I think it had North, maybe Norman, Northmen, Normans. So they because they came from the North, that's where the Normans settled. So now you had the Vikings here, and for a long time, you had Vikings in England as well. But by 9/11, the Vikings were out of England, and they found they have a place here, and they were given this area. Of course, we all know Normandy is famous for that's where the Allies, you know, landed in World War II.
You mentioned earlier Gateshead, and the Jewish life had not come in yet. So I missed what the reference to Gateshead was.
Just all I just said is today there's a beautiful, beautiful city with very from lots of learning. Jewish life is vibrant, and all we have left from the Roman Empire is a wall from Hadrian. That's all I meant from there. So it was just that, you know, you see who's still around and who's not. That's all I meant from that. Okay, so now you have the Normandies over here, and what's going to happen is the king of England is going to marry somebody. Eventually what happened to the Vikings, the Normans, is eventually they became like Frenchmen, and they eventually assimilated into France. They actually they settled, and they grew roots, and that's it. Eventually the Normans were they may have been a little different, you know, they may have, you know, from, but all in all, they ended up becoming Frenchmen, they ended up becoming part of the French Empire. Okay, so now, that was 9/11. I don't know if it means anything, I'm just noticing that now. That was in the year 9, that was 9/11, that's King Rollo ended up coming, taking out Normandy. The reason why it's going to be significant is that one of the kings is going to have he's going to have a relative in Normandy, and see if we could piece it together. And what's going to happen is the king of the Duke of Normandy is going to feel, hey, actually, we're going to see that he's going to be related to the king of England who died, and he's going to say, England belongs to me, and it's William the Conqueror. What we know is William the Conqueror. He feels, because he's somehow related into the family, that he deserves to be the king of England, and the Norman invasion of England is going to happen in 1066. So in 1066, this is like 150 years later, and when the Normans first came, so they have king, they have dukes and nobles, and basically what happens is, okay, Abby, so first is the king in the Edward, who was the king, about 1066, or a little before, he gave his kingdom to Harold, and Harold was crowned the same day. This is a picture of England, it's a picture of Edward, it's a picture of Harold. Harold became king. However, I guess William, for whatever reason, didn't think that that's what should be, and he led Duke William of Normandy in 1066. He invaded England, the famous Battle of Hastings. There are a whole list of battles that they say changed the world. You know, it was really decisive. And whoever won that, it changed history, or it set the course of history. And the Battles of Hastings was one of those battles where William defeated Harold, and that was it. He also went to Westminster Abbey, and he himself also got himself, he was, he himself had him inaugurated and installed as king. Since then, all kings went to Westminster Abbey. That's, I guess that was some sort of big church or whatever, and that's where they went. It was traditional. That's where kings were to be inaugurated. We're going to see later, that's where Richard the Lionhearted, it was a terrible tragedy that ended up happening, and hundreds of Jews were killed. It was out of an incident that got out of hand. But that's where Duke William came in 1066. Feudal system. He took the feudal system that was in Europe and he imposed it into England. Nobles were Normans and the peasants were English speaking Saxons. So this is what the Westminster Abbey looks like. Normans. Okay. So now William and his descendants, they became the kings of England. French was the language of the aristocracy. They came from France, so they were that's who spoke French, still in England. The French king, the English kings spoke French. As a matter of fact, Richard the Lionhearted didn't speak English. So when he becomes king, he just didn't even speak English. But it's okay, because in his entire rule, I don't think he was in England more than 3 months. But okay, we'll get to that.
He spoke French?
He spoke French, right. French later introduced feudalism. This is, 1085, this established a Doomsday Book, which is a book that recorded all landowners. I guess Doomsday, I don't know what it means. I know with Weaver, the Doomsday is like the end of, end the way we know it. I guess maybe once they put it in the book, that's it, you are finished. The king knew what you had. But that was the Doomsday Book, is an official king record to know what you, or maybe it was called Domesday at that time, but to know what who owned what. Also, the 1086. Also, the Oath of Salisbury, which is that I don't know if everybody in the country had to make this shvua, but at least those in charge had to make an oath to the king. Your loyalty is to the king. The kings of England were always stronger than the kings, for sure, of Germany, and even of France. They always were like cutting edge in what they can take charge. What more could they do to their people, the Jews as well? The 1066. Okay, we did this. This is Normandy. This is England. I guess it should have been a little further. Welsh managed to, there was a Celtic language. So up the north where the Celts were, they had their language, Latin by the priests, French by the aristocrats, Saxon by the commoners. Saxon developed into England, English. So you had Middle English, Chaucer, whatever. There was a change into what we have today, but that's what it was. Okay, you have a duke and a duchess, a duchess. I'm sorry, it was a duchess. A duke is he was the highest ranking hereditary title in Great Britain, the British Isle, and the duchess was his wife. Then you had a marquis, if I'm saying it correctly, a marquis. He was a nobleman, and he was very similar to a count. The only thing is a marquis was a little bit above a count, because a marquis, his land was at like a border. So he had more cheshivas, because a count had land in the middle of the country, a marquis had land at the edge of the country. So in terms of who's above who, so that's, you had, marquis is higher. Now there was the Marquis of Queensborough, okay? So he was into boxing. He brought boxing into the world. So he would get people to, he would go to different other people and say, okay, you get your man, I get my man, you have boxing matches. So if the term, put up your dukes, really comes from here. It's like, because, your duke, who you putting up, I'm putting up my man. So that's where it comes from. Okay, so we covered boxing too. As a result, the marquis was trusted. Okay, so that's it. A marquis had a little bit more than a count. An earl was in place of the king. He was working for the king in a certain area. Viscount is second to a count. Baron, a title of honor, usually hereditary, ruled over land that didn't cover an entire area. So a baron is not as big as a count. Okay, these are the different titles of what people were. King and queen in terms of years. So you had Edward. This was still from the Germans. Harold, William I. He's known as William the Conqueror, 1066, and it's going to go all the way through. We're going to really end by Edward the First. By Edward the First, all the Jews are going to be thrown out of England. So really, and most of the Jews that we know are going to be coming from William the Conqueror. There may have been a few before, but from William the Conqueror, they're going to come in. So we're really talking from 1066 to 1292. So it's about 200 and some odd years. That's the period that we're looking at. Okay, so now we'll get, comes William, King William II. This is the Doomsday Book. He died in 1087 while leading a campaign in northern France. His William's lands were divided. Normandy went to his eldest son, Robert, and his second surviving son, William, received England. Okay, so Robert now has Normandy, which is in France, and William received England. Okay, what happens now? So here you go. So the first is William number two gets, William number two is in England. Henry the First, he wasn't called first then because there were no others, but we know him as Henry the First, is going to get, had originally just given Normandy. So kings had this problem because, you know, you had to make every son happy. You know, that's, if you didn't make them happy, then they'd make themselves happy. So what happened, yeah, King Henry the First, what happened is William went on a hunting expedition in 1100 and was somehow mysteriously killed by an arrow through the lung. We don't know what happened, but William, the youngest brother, immediately went to London, and he was crowned within days before anybody, the archbishop, anybody could arrive. So he, so you come to your own conclusions, whatever. But so William the, so you had William the First, William the Second, and now Henry. So William, okay, now Henry is already going up. The Empire of England is still on the rise. Henry invaded Normandy, reunited England, and Normandy, Duke Robert's brother, was taken prisoner. Okay, so, I'm sorry. Robert, I misspoke. Henry was either given nothing or a small little place. He killed William, his oldest brother, and then the next brother, Robert, that had Normandy. So after Henry took over England, he then attacked Normandy and he took Normandy. So now, again, England and Normandy are all under one king, Henry the First. Okay, okay. So now we're William the First, William the Second. Henry killed Robert and he put Robert in prison. He killed William, and now Henry is the king of everything. Okay. He was into justice. He really... about the justice, the system in England evolved, began to develop the Royal Exchequer. Now, this is a collection of taxes. So now he got all the taxes. You know, kings have they need a lot of money. So taxes were very, very important, and he set up a very, a much more sophisticated system to collect taxes. This is where the Jews are going to come in, of one of the things. But the reason why it was called the Exchequer, whereas a royal exchequer, and I think it was because the original tablecloth was checkered. So they got the name exchequer, okay? Using it to collect, okay, fine. Now, he also had justices, which used to go from country to country, area to county, you know? So you had the royal justices, the royal judges would come from in the city, you know, okay, what's the, if they had any court cases, they would take care of it, and they made their way around. Like, this is like a positive thing for Henry the First. He was into justice and judges and getting the tax system set.
What was that an image of?
I'm sorry?
What was that an image of?
This? This is supposed to be, I think, I see justice, you see the scales, these are judges, I think, coming around. I think, I think this is the judges going from place to place. I think an image of, this is a relief, some probably stained glass somewhere, or a picture of on some old English wall of judges going from place to place and judging. Okay, that's, I guess, the symbol of judging. Let's see. Okay, he'd get money from fines and fees, and they had something called the pipe roll. And the first one we have is from 1130, which would, the pipe roll, I guess, would be money coming in, money coming out. That's the reformed coinage, 1107, 1108, 1125. In other words, he would make sure that it was important, you had good coins, a good coinage system, and that you didn't have fraudulent coins and coin clippings or whatever you would do with the money back then. Today, our money is just a representative. The nickel does not have 5 cents worth of nickel. A nickel would not be all nickel, because a nickel's worth of nickel is worth more than a nickel, if that makes sense, right? A copper penny is mostly not copper. Our money is all representative. A paper dollar is represented to what the value is. It doesn't have real value, but back then, your coins were made out of whether it's copper, silver, gold. So all these, so you had to make sure that your coins were up to standard, and that nobody was playing with the coins. And a few times they would go ahead and they would make sure if there were any, I guess they called it coin clippings, and there were Jews that were taken, thrown into prison. I'm not sure if they were killed when they were accused of coin clipping or taking. This is I think an example of a pipe roll. I can't read it, but okay. Next, so King Henry I was really, now again, England is becoming large scale. It's becoming its superpower. It has a lot of things going on there. They have great natural resources. They have a good justice system, a strong central government. Remember the Oath of Salisbury. Everybody has to swear their allegiance to the king. Nobility subservient to the king. He had the nobles under his hand. Yes?
Yes. So when and where did the Jews come from?
That's the next slide. One more slide. I just asked for this. That's it. They have abundance of land, hardworking, populace, strong military, efficient tax system. What do you think that they were missing? They were just missing a middle class, and there was no money. That's what he missed. That's what he was missing. He has everything, but in order for a country to go, you need a business, you need money to be lent and be and brought back and everything. And that's where the, that's what a great, you know, segue. Thank you so much. So what happened is Henry, again, there were Jews that were already there since 1066. Actually, William the Conqueror also brought in Jews. But Henry I, he went into this in a large way. He realized the importance, the value of having money and having Jews being able to go ahead and build an economy. So he promoted Jewish immigration, charter protection for Jews, which was really huge. Oh, why do you need Jews for this? Because recently had come out. I forgot which one from the church. They had recently come out that the Christians cannot charge interest from other Christians. So if you can't charge interest, you're not going to lend money. Why should I give you money? You know, so who could charge interest? So Jews, you know, they're going to burn in Gehenna anyway. So let them charge
the
interest.
They got that from the Jews,
huh?
They got that from the Jews.
Yeah. They had the Old Testament, right? They believed in the Old Testament, so it says, you know, a brother can't. You know,
grievous.
You can't have interest. So, I guess they didn't hold of Hillel's Hitariska. You know, the Hitariska, whatever. They didn't go with all the coolers. You know, their mom is strict. Chumras, you can't. But in any case, they Christians were not allowed to have loan on interest. So that's where the Jews came in, and the Jews they almost like forced the Jews to take over this part of society. It was a tremendous need for such a position, which Christians themselves couldn't do. And the Jews, they were, I guess, naturally good at this. And this is what was necessary. All over Europe, this was not only England, but England as well. I'm sorry, Jerry.
When they finally migrated there, the first Jews came from where?
From Europe.
Any particular country?
They came from France and Germany. Most likely, the originals probably came from France with William the Conqueror. They, you know, William the Conqueror was from France. He probably brought some from with them as well. The real anti-Semitism of Jews really didn't come till around the Crusade time, which is 1096 was the first Crusades. It was getting worse and worse, but until that time, the Christians didn't know that they can kill Jews en masse or expel all of them, and you know, then that's where the idea that we're going out to in the name of Christianity to kill Muslims. So why do we have to go so far when you have Jews in our own midst? So that's where that idea came from. So the Crusades really changed an entire mindset, and so. In England, King Henry protected his Jews. As a matter of fact, he gave them a charter of protection. Okay, just going back a bit, see, William the Conqueror himself, he believed that he brought the Jews in as as he brought them in, by a group of Jews in 1070, right? He conquered in 1066, knowing that he needs Jews. Already Jews started coming in 1070, but in those days they were not permitted to own land. They were very restricted in what they can come in and what they can do. They were money lending. Okay. Then, just another thing which is very interesting, this is again 1092, this is 4 years before the First Crusade, and it's in England. And it just brings down that it's written, I don't know whoever this person is, Gilbert Crispin, who was an abbot of Westminster. I guess that means some sort of a priest. And he would have business dealings with a Jew. And what happened is as they would, you know, they'd sit down, and after their business, they would start talking religion, and they'd go back and forth with scriptures, and he would say this, and he would say this. And it was one time, he writes, Crispin, he writes that he was with a Jew and they had more time than usual, and they were going back and forth and discussing religion and debating it, and it must have drawn a crowd, and many, many people came, and they were people were like astounded. They heard what the Jew had to say and what the abbot had to say, and they're going back and forth. And afterwards, he says that the people told me, they asked me, write it down, you know, record your dispute. And he did. But it just goes to show that, at least in England in 1092, that the Jews and the Christians were on very cordial relations. And they were able to discuss religion like this. This was also common in Spain up until a certain point, until the Christian reconquest. But under the Muslims, Jews were able to talk, you know, religion with the Muslims, and the early on in the Christians also. So the Christians got a lot stronger, and I guess until after the time of the Crusades, when now you're starting to fight for your religion, you're not going to be as tolerant. Okay, but this is just something very interesting, 1092. His charter on the Jews. So, first of all, Jews were permitted to move around the country. I guess Henry realized the importance of Jews, and he wanted to make it very, very attractive for them to come. So, he gave a royal charter, and that was Jews permitted to move around the country without paying tolls.
They had a chief rabbi of London then.
Yeah, the chief rabbi of London. Even back then, they had buy and sell goods and property. Before that time, again, coming in originally, they were not able to buy property. Now they were. They could sell the pledges they had to hold in a year and a day, and they could be tried by their peers also. You know, you have a Besdin. If there's an incident in terms of what's happening with the Jews, you didn't necessarily have to go to the courts. They allowed the Jews to go to their own courts. Okay, so huge. This is like, you know, what you're giving the Jews. I mean, the non-Jews had to pay tolls, but just to show how much Henry III, the kings, needed the Jews and felt their importance. This is huge, and the Jews did not have any type of freedom like this in the mainland. This is maybe in Spain, but not in the mainland Europe. Two more things. He could be sworn over a Torah rather than a Christian Bible, especially a Jewish person's oath, which was valid against that of 12 Christians. Okay, because they represented the King of England. Now, the King of England said, the Jews are working for me. And he was the first one to come up with the idea. I don't know if I have it over here. The king, it's called property in Australia. I don't know how to say it. It has a Latin word, but the king viewed the Jews as his private property, personal property. If you mess with the Jews, it's like messing with the king's property. It's like he owned the Jews, so to speak, and therefore, if he owned the Jews, he owned all their money. So it was not wise for anybody to start up with the Jews, because the king technically could take it personally. Now, at this point, King Henry I and the kings that came after him originally realized that if the Jews do well, then the society, England, will do well, because you're allowing them to sell money and make money available. That means the economy is going to grow and expand. You know, something that some of the politicians today would do good understanding this concept, you know. You know, but the more you raise your taxes and the more you take money out of this is not an economics class, but the more you take money out of the society and you and then the less money there is to go around, the more the, you know, less money people could buy and build, and less money goes around. So the king really understood that he had to take, let the Jews, give them free reign, let them make their money, and when they make money and they're lending, then people are able to buy and build, and they make more money and they're hiring more, and that's how your economy expands. And King Henry I got it, and that's the country of England took off. It was really, really doing well. This is huge, because at this point it's going to also have an effect for the rest of Europe, that the king in England, he viewed the Jews as his personal property. So it was a double. It could have been also a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, if you have a strong king and a good king, and the populace likes the king, so then the Jews are in a good position. If the population dislikes the king, and the Jews are representing a king that they dislike, well, transitive, right? Now we're getting to math, right? If one equals two and two equals three, so then one is. So if you hate the king and the kings are the Jews, and you say you hate the Jews, that could also be. That was also part of what, and also some of the kings in Europe are going to catch on to this, and they're gonna want to take care of that as well. They're gonna want to view their Jews as their own property, and I think when we finish with England, we're going to see that that's what was happening in Europe, in Germany in particular, in the end of the 1200s, where the king of Rudolf said, "Hey, I like that idea. The Jews are mine, and if they're mine, their money's mine." And German Jews were not used to such a relationship with the king. You know, they never thought themselves as being owned by the king. What's also going to happen, and that's why the Jews are going to leave, is at some point in 1292, I think it was King Edward I is going to say, look, they took all the money from the Jews. The Jews had no more money. They were broke and they were poor. You know, the goose that laid the golden egg. As long as you have a goose and you can get eggs, golden eggs, it's good. But once you destroy the goose, that's it. There's nothing left. So Edward I and the king before him took all the money, in the short term, they took a lot of the money from the Jews and fined them and didn't allow them to make money. So now the Jews were poor. So now they're not getting any more taxes from them. Well, they're not getting any more taxes from them, and I'm here to protect them. Well, what am I protecting? Like, you know, they became a burden on the king. That's when they got rid of them. So this idea that the king owns the Jews is, I guess, double-edged. When things are good, it's good for the Jews, but it's going to... And if it's not good, it's also no good. Okay, King Henry I, there were some persecutions, so this is just how the excuse of how they got money from the Jews. It was a charge that Jews had killed a sick man. The Jews were doctors, even back then, it was still a Jewish profession. So what probably happened, from what I was reading, is it was a doctor that a very sick man came to a Jewish doctor to get healed, and he was, I guess, maybe too far gone. He was very sick, and he died. And they blamed this Jew for killing a Christian. So the word got out that the Jews killed a Christian, and the king got very upset, and he said, "That's it. I'm fining you £2,000. £2,000 for." I'm not sure if that's silver, the shillings, I'm not sure how that, but it was pounds of silver, which is, now this is before, when it, this is a few years ago, so I know silver has gone like through the roof, but a few years ago it was 2 million pounds of silver, in those days is about $3.5 million today. So they fined the Jews $3.5 million because of this incident. There were only a few Jews in the city. The whole royal yearly income was £2,000. So they GDP of the year, they fined the entire Jews the entire sum. Where did Jews get the money from? So most of it, a large part of it, maybe even most, maybe almost all, was, okay, we owe you £2,000. That's it. We're not paying it anymore. So that's, and they did that often, every so often. That's, the Jews also had to worry about that, is that all the debts were nullified. Every so often, debts that were owed to the Jews were nullified. And you do this too often, then that's it. You don't have any more, you know, Jews can't work effectively. Like, why should we if we're just going to take everything away? Okay, now what happened is so King Henry dies, and King Henry, he has a, I think his daughter is his wife is Matilda, but he had a son who was very, very young, a baby, and that his son was not able to take over. Let's see if I have any. Oh, okay, great. Okay, so now this is, we're talking over here, King Henry the First, right? So he was married to a lady called Matilda, and Matilda, they had another daughter called Matilda. I guess they had a shortage of names. I guess they couldn't. But okay, and Matilda, Sparty. I'm sorry,
they weren't Sparty.
Okay, all right. Okay, so they had a daughter Matilda, who eventually married a person, Geoffrey. Okay, Henry the Second. Now, what happened is when Henry the First died, so there was a war. Who was going to succeed Henry the First? So at first, his wife Matilda, who was again of Scotland, you know, she came from Scotland. He married Matilda from Scotland. So now, if she would have been king or queen, she would have had England and Scotland. But so she tried to make a run for it for the throne. Okay, and she was. She had to fight a person by the name of Stephen. Who was Stephen? Now Stephen, as you can see over here, William the First. This is William the Conqueror. Had a daughter Adela, and Adela's daughter was Stephen. So now there was a civil war or whatever. Who would become the next king? So at first Matilda had the upper hand, and then eventually Stephen ended up becoming the next king, okay? And then, whatever, it's going to come back to Henry the First, because Henry the First's grandson, Henry the Second, is going to end up, but that's how it goes. So Henry the First and Matilda and Stephen are going to have it out. First Matilda gets, but Stephen takes care of it. Why is this significant? Because wherever Matilda went, so let me just see, let's go back a bit. What happened is that before, when Matilda had the upper hand, so there was a place, I think it was it in London or Oxford? It was a place where she came in and she said to the Jews, that's it, I want money. You have to raise for me this amount of money. Now, what could they do? You know, Henry died, Matilda was like, you know, she looked like she was going to be queen and she had an army. And they went ahead and they gave her the taxes and they paid whatever she extorted from them. And then what happened is a few years later, after Matilda was taken away from Stephen, so now Stephen came in and Stephen said to these Jews, yeah, you supported Matilda, my enemy. Now you're going to have to pay me three times the amount that you paid Matilda. That's it. We didn't support her. She took it from us. But, you know. But somehow, kings weren't interested, and they just really wanted the money. So, okay, so that's what happened. So when Stephen came in, this is an incident that happened, but this is basically what happened in at least in one area. I don't know if it's a larger area of England, but now Stephen is now the king, and Stephen also gets it. He understands the value of Jews overall, and he keeps it with the protection. The only thing is Stephen is not as popular with the people as Henry the First is. There's a lot more lawlessness. He doesn't have all of his nobles and dukes and everybody under his control. And there is like a, you know, the king has less power than Stephen had less power than Henry the First. Well, if you own the Jews and you're a very powerful king, then the Jews are very powerfully protected. But if you're under a king that does not have as much power, so then your Jews are not as powerfully protected. So you may not be as afraid to do something with the king's property, especially if the king is not as popular, not so popular. Okay, during the time of Stephen, something that happened that started in the city of Norwich, And that was something which was a source of such sorrow, such problems for the Jews for the next hundreds of years. Actually, even in, I think the last one was in New York, and that's something called the blood libel. And the first blood libel came in Norwich in 1144. What the story there was, I think there was a... But just I guess I do have written over here is even though the blood libel that happened on this, so we'll talk about it in a second, but this is 1144 is the Second Crusades. The Second Crusades, he protected his Jews. Stefan did not allow any of the excesses, any of the problems of the Crusades in England. The truth is most of the European kings protected their Jews during the Second Crusade. They realized what the problems that happened in the First Crusade, and again, it was bad for business for Jews for kings anywhere. But for the most part, the Jews did not suffer in the Second Crusade as much as they did the First Crusade, England as well. So, what is the blood libel? You had this boy named William, and he was found in a forest dead. So. It's just like crazy claims, and I guess maybe if you make it, the crazier you make it, the more people believe it. I don't know, maybe that was Goebbels. I know he did that. You make the craziest claims, and people believe it. Maybe that's where he got it from. Anyway, the claim was that the Jews had this international council everywhere. Sounds like the pre-runner of the protocols of the Elder of Zion's. And every year they have to, around the time of Easter, they have to find a child and they have to kill a Christian child, which that somehow will ensure that the Jews will restore to the Holy Land. Now, I'm just saying it like I'm saying it. Is there more to the theory? Maybe. But the fact that the Jews somewhere in the world have to go ahead and find a Christian child to kill. And this year was Norwich, and this is William, and this boy William ended up becoming like a saint. It was just a very, I'm pretty much sure you can go today to where William of Norwich was. They made a big deal about him. Turned to a cobble, inquiring, he became a martyr. Pilgrims go to his place, the local church, but it was this is the original, the first blood libel, and the blood libel is gonna. In England, it came again in 1168, 1181, 1183, and that's it. And then it spread throughout Europe. And whenever there was a blood libel, whenever a Christian child was missing or lost or killed, the Jews knew that trouble was just around the corner. Serious trouble was around the corner. The Jews would be killed, expelled, atrocities. And this is... the popes... generally all came out against blood libels. It's not true. Kings also, the local populace, they were very into it. And especially the local populace is the ones that owed Jews money. So they're going to, do anything they could to kill Jews and not have to pay money. I'm up to King Henry II. So this is, I just don't have it here. Okay, so I think maybe we'll stop here if I could take questions. But Stefan, he died in 1154. And now Henry II is going to take over. Under Henry II, the Jews are going to reach their zenith. We're going to talk about Aaron of Lincoln, who is probably richer than the king himself. And we're going to see what happens. And then we'll probably get to the... if not the end next week, but the week after. Any questions?
Well, the next week